1. Hello, everyone. I'm Leslie Cornwell, certified nurse midwife with Empowering Midwifery Education. I have Tanya here with me. She is a newer EME instructor and is doing a really awesome course that's coming out this fall. So I wanted her to do kind of some, if you want to learn more in depth who she is, watch her first video. We'll attach a link below. So she's just going to give you the high elevator speech of her background. But this one, I really want to dive into her course that's coming out, some of the myths that are out there, and why this information is so important.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So give them a high-level overview of why you're a midwife, what your expertise is, and then we'll dive into your upcoming course.
Yeah, so the course that I am working on right now is fitness in the perinatal period for healthcare providers. So what we're trying to do is not turn you into a personal trainer, not ask you to do stuff that you're like, that's not my job, but like give you a deeper understanding of where these worlds might actually do better together, but also dispel a lot of myths because unfortunately, I think we can all admit that we have a serious lack of information when it comes to both exercise and nutrition, probably both of those things. And we probably get more nutrition than we do exercise, but we end up learning things in non-evidence-based ways. So for a profession that is holds itself to such a high standard of being evidence-based, I don't actually see this happening when we talk to people about fitness. And yet we know that exercise is such a great tool for overall health, right? All the things that we can make better in someone's overall health status through just exercise and nutrition. It's really hard to say one without the other. But anyway, so just dispelling myths alone could go very far. But I also think that pregnancy and postpartum are such unique times, and the body goes through so many changes. And I know that we're really interested in general in understanding the pelvic floor. And I think when we take what we already know and apply it to a body that needs to move through space that's either pregnant or postpartum, all of a sudden all the light bulbs start going off and we can really help people meet their goals, which is really what we want to do. So I would love to tell you about some of the myths that we're going to talk about in the course. Is that okay?
Yeah, it's totally fine. I mean, one thing that was going through my head just it hit me like a lightning bolt, the ripple effect. If we had more endurance, like how many less epidurals, how much less pain, how much less C-sections, like the ripple effect that prevention would actually have of empowering people to go walk for 20, 30 minutes. And part of it is we all know these things, but to have someone that has the time to help you implement them and support you through the habit changing, that's the hard part, is the time component that's needed and dedicated to this support.
And you also have to have a lot of knowledge in order to individualize. So when you just said, if everybody could go for whatever walk, there's actually a lot of different ways that we can unpack that, right? So if we know the guideline, which I don't know how many people have actually sat down and read the various guidelines on physical activity, but hopefully many people know that what we're looking for is about 150 minutes a week. That's not a lot. It's really not that much. And there's not a ton of direction that's given. I could get specific about what I'd like to see that look like, but you know what? I'll take any form of movement for a total of 150 hours and call that a win, and then we can build on the wins from there. But we could have someone who goes for a 10-minute walk after each meal to boost their metabolism and start, getting insulin to do what it's supposed to do, right? Like, depending on what that person's capable of and what we can get them to say, yeah, I think that fits into my life. So,
Well,
but
and
we don't
part of
actually
it, when you talk about the individualization, it's not so much just the endurance. Like some people can swim, some people can do treadmills, some people can do bikes. I'm also thinking what makes them happy and passionate. Because if you told me, Tanya, you have to do 20 minutes every day standing on that treadmill, staring at a wall, I will tell you, go F yourself. Because I feel like a rat on a wheel. Like I want to garden, I want to chase my kids, I'll do fun yoga, like kid, like if you it, but that's part of that individualized care. You learn their personality, you learn what they're passionate, and now you can create some fun exercise program with stuff that they already love.
Absolutely. I am so right there with you, by the way. I absolutely hate being on a treadmill or a
I'm
stationary
a
bike.
productive gal. I'm like, my time's too valuable. I'm gonna go garden. I'm gonna
I am.
create something. I'm gonna do something with this exercise time.
I'm so with you. I actually was just telling a client today, a client who's postpartum and who's anxious to get back on her Peloton. I was just telling her that I am not sure Peloton is for me, and I'm pretty sure the reason that I like strength training is because it's actually the lazy person sport. Because if you do one really heavy lift, you're like, whew, I get to rest for a couple minutes before I do my next
I
lift.
know in 30
Actually,
seconds
it's
your
about
heart is
resting a
racing, and I
lot
was like, oh, it would have taken me 12 minutes on the treadmill to get to the same level. Yes, I'm a functional exerciser, totally. That's why I love my weights too, because I'm like, oh, I got the burn in 3 minutes. Yes.
Absolutely. And then there's all this new data that, like, in terms of high intensity interval training, for example, 12 minutes. It's like the biggest bang for your buck. 12 minutes of high intensity interval training will get you the same as, I can't quite remember, but like 30 minutes of kind of something that's a lower intensity that's consistent, right? So there's so many ways we can unpack this depending on what people
Well, and
like.
I think that's where people get overwhelmed. You could teach them a thousand different ways to do it. You could do constantly slow and steady wins the race. You could do intervals. You could do 20 different exercises, then the proper way to do the exercises. The more complex the system is, the more our human nature just kind of shuts down, like, okay, this is too complicated to learn.
At the end of the day, when we don't have it all organized in our minds, the easiest thing we can do is remind each other that movement, even imperfect movement is better than no movement at all, right? And so our job just needs to be to get people moving, figure out what lights a fire under them, and get them doing it, and then we can tweak and optimize further and further from there, right?
Cool. So yeah, I would love to. You said you were going to tease about some of the myths that are out there. I'm very interested to hear that are from your course that you're going to dive into.
Yeah, so okay, my favorite, and this isn't exactly a myth actually, but it's something we say that I think has taken on mythical status. So we tell people to listen to their bodies. What does that mean?
It's very, very obsessed because then you can't be wrong. It's very subjective versus you say, do this for 2 minutes, and then they don't see the results. You have the accountability part.
Listen to your body. So if you say listen to your body to a high-level athlete, let me tell you, they're going to push through pain because that's how they got to be a high-level athlete. Is that what we meant? Probably not.
Oh,
If
my
we
body, if you tell me to listen to my body, my brain's already said, no, you can just sit here a little longer. You can do that later.
that's
You
what my
can do
brain says
that if
too. The second, if I am not in a very particular environment with a very particular program, the second I sweat or breathe hard, I think I should be able to be done. So we have to know what someone's internal mechanisms are or what their natural state is before we can use that language. But let's look at the other side. So someone who doesn't move a whole lot, if we tell them to listen to their body, what's going to happen?
The
Something
habit,
more
what
like,
they've been doing, they're going to keep doing. There's a reason that they're in their situation that they are now.
yeah. So that's not enough information. And it's not that I don't think we should say listen to your body, but we have to layer things on depending on the situation. So I'll give you an example. When someone is pregnant, but quite often when they're postpartum, I talk about something that I call the three P's. And the three P's stand for pain, pressure, and peeing. So I might tell someone who's returning to fitness postpartum that I want you to listen to your body, but here's what I really want you to listen for. I want you to stop what you're doing as you're just starting these new things and trialing them out and experimenting if you experience any of the three P's, pain, pressure, peeing. I want to know about it. I want to know when it happened. I want to know what you were doing. Send me a video, whatever it is, because I can often see something in their strategy that I can say, hey, do me a favor. Can you try it like this and tell me if that's any better? And oftentimes I can get a difference out of them. And that's what we're looking for. We're trying to figure out how to get someone to move without pain, pressure, leaking when we're talking about the perinatal period. So I want us to start hearing the words we use and understanding whether they hold meaning or not. And even when we don't think they have meaning, they do. And we have to kind of put ourselves in someone else's shoes and think about how might that be taken from us.
No, I think that's a great point to make because I think as midwives, we're so used to in labor using that lingo. Just listen to your body, tell it how to move and twist. So it works perfectly prenatally and postpartum just to use that same spiel. Like our bodies know best, but there's a long history, habit of histories that are telling our subconscious very different things that may be good or not good. So.
Another one that we I think we tell people inadvertently is when we're telling people to be careful during pregnancy, we are sending a message that exercise isn't safe. People come to us all the time in our midwife capacity. This isn't even me in my trainer capacity. This is me recalling that difference that I felt when I gained all this knowledge and looked back on the things I said to people in the office. In an effort to not have them hurt themselves, we have great intentions, right? It's all those things we talk about when we talk about good intentions. We can have great intentions, but what we may have done is make someone scared to move in the only way that they were gonna move. To stay healthy.
Right. Well, and it's interesting because we always say you don't want to live in a bubble. You just want to be a little more careful. Right. Because I mean, even just the culture and stigma when you're on the other end of it being pregnant, like, don't go on that ladder. Don't do this. And I'm like, I'm not handicapped. I've got a baby in my belly. Or those moms that do the marathons that do all this stuff that it's interesting how our society, I mean, we cause health detriments by saying, oh, just prop your feet up. Take it easy. Take it easy. And that's all they do all day long because we think we're being helpful as a society. Like, hey, let's go for a little walk. Like, hey, let's get some fresh air. Like these little things that we sometimes do that we don't even. Yeah. So it's interesting how that presentation comes about of like even the mindset of bed rest. It's taken so long to get. I mean, you and I could talk about that for quite a while. Is there really evidence by it, but it's still being used. And so many people think it's any soon as you have an issue problem, just lay down and rest for a while. Just take it easy. Just take it easy. And that'll solve everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, those are two really vague examples, but then there's other things that are much more concrete, like don't let your heart rate get above 140. Where'd that come from?
I haven't heard that one.
How did we get there? A lot of people will say that. And maybe people say other numbers. The point is there's not an actual number that we can cite. I understood that 140 came out of some research that was done where 140 was what was used as the parameter. But just because that's what was arbitrarily chosen in the study as the parameter doesn't make that right or wrong, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing goes for how much weight do you believe somebody should be able to lift pregnant or postpartum? Mm-hmm. I've heard so many different numbers out of this. And how can we give someone a number when we don't know what they're capable of? So if someone has never deadlifted in their life, let's say, they don't even know what a deadlift is. So maybe they've lifted a bag of dog food and let's call it 40 pounds. We know they can deadlift 40 pounds, but somebody else trains that movement and can deadlift 300 pounds. How can we put a number on what someone should do?
Yeah, you can't generalize sterile. Don't carry your baby, but then the other person can carry their baby. And like, even when you were talking about like the myths of, there's some data with weight gain, but I think there's too much assumptions that because somebody's genetics and they come in with a BMI, but they're really tall, or they just cookie cutter assumptions of what type of lifestyle, or oh, they're saying they're eating healthy and exercising, but their BMI is morbidly obese or whatever. Like we instantly start putting pegged assumptions to people based on those things that are done at that first visit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so yeah, I'm very, very excited. I mean, I have been so blessed with my instructors. Like you guys teach me so much. I get to pick the coolest, unique niches to pull in because their whole point with EME is not to make continuing education that everybody else is doing or they can access. What are these unique things that are gaps with school, gaps with training on the job? They're unique rabbit holes people went down that just aren't getting recognized right now. So I am so excited, Tanya, to have you on our team and bringing your expertise with nutrition, exercise. At the beginning, you didn't brag on this one. You're a CrossFit trainer. You are a, you do yoga. You're a personal trainer. I mean, you have so many certifications on top of being a nurse midwife that you are like that perfect blend. If someone wants to advocate for implementing change with their administration side and departments to implement this, plus helping with consumers, you do both worlds beautifully.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you have a wonderful rest of your day and I appreciate your time. I can't wait for your course to come out this fall.
Thanks so much.